it's great to be here. For all the North Dakota jokes aside, I spent years in North Dakota, worked for North Dakota State University, had worked and lived on their Carrington Research and Experiment Farm, and they were the, no jokes aside, the toughest winters I've ever seen. So we went back home. It didn't last very long. So I went back to that ranch, and I showed you that picture. In the Dakotas, this is fall roundup time, and that was certainly the best mornings of my life. I call that picture mornings on horseback, and it was it's a great time to be in the Dakotas in September and October, and riding out early and coming back with a calf crop. It's a lot of fun, and I miss that a lot. But I've had a great second career, and would like to share with you some of that information. I was thinking about Darrell's take, though, when you get to the fork in the road, take it. I will tell you, though, it reminded me of the first time I went to my wife's parents' house and never been in that community before, and got to a road. We got down a road, and there was a Y coming up, and so I said, "Well, Jane, which way do I go?" And she said, "Straight." So I went left, and I was wrong, and I've been wrong since. Straight. Well, it's a great business, and what a great time to be in the business. This is absolutely an incredible time, and I hope that what I have to tell you is still important with the kind of cattle market we have, with the kind of bull market that I hope you all have next spring. I hope it just is so great that you just look back and it's always good. It's good for you. I hope that's true. But my goals for today are to discuss with you measuring profits to reflect efficiency. And that's really where I'm going to go. And it's going to take a little bit of a leap with for you to go there with me. But I think it's really important, especially as we start to talk about determining indices for profitability. Next thing I'm going to do is explain some profit and financial efficiency and explain those as a set of relationships. I think it's kind of a different way of looking at things. Share some research results. I only have one table. It's amazing, right? Darrell didn't have any data. I can't believe it. Discuss the importance of using the correct denominator. There's a great book out for those in North Dakota. I think North Dakotans and South Dakotans are great readers, and it does a lot of time to read in the wintertime. Good to Great is a super book by Dr. Jim Collins, who's a Stanford business professor, and I think you folks would really get a lot out of that book. So, and he talks a lot about the importance of having the right denominator, and I'm catching up to someone that good. Profit, risk versus opportunity. I think we really have to, I'll share some thoughts with you about that. So that's what I'm going to go through. First, we need to define profit. And there's really two definitions. One of them is net income, and it's the one that most of us think about. And so, if you don't mind my cartoon there, it's profit equals gross revenue minus total expenses, and I've got inventory adjustments up there because you got to have should be done on an accrual basis. And I know we're all kind of tax oriented folks. You know, it's our responsibility not to pay taxes as a cattleman, right? And so we don't use an accrual. Most of us don't use an accrual system. We use tax accounting, and that really has kind of put a shroud over our understanding of profit, because most of our activity, a lot of our activity, especially as we bump up here in November and December, is going to be what was my gross income this year? How can I manage that schedule up not to show the government any profit? Well, that's great on one side, but it causes a lot of improper feedback to a manager. So net income is one measure of profitability. And another is return on assets. And there's a few spins on this one, return on equity, return on investment. But the big one is return on assets. And so it's just net income divided by the investment that it took to create that net income. And if you were buying a stock or evaluating a stock in a mutual fund for a retirement program, you'd understand, you'd look right at ROA. Are these folks making money with what they've invested in factories, equipment, etc.? Well, ROA is not used very much in the cattle business because it takes some steps that we're not used to taking in record keeping. So, is net income a measure of efficiency? It doesn't have a denominator. If you think about efficiency, you guys are all thinking about feed efficiency, aren't you? Well, this is financial efficiency, and the problem with net income is that there's no denominator. There's no feed to gain has a denominator. There's nothing underneath it. It's just a numerator. It's a measure of output, just like yearling weight, just like weaning weight. There's no input measurement doesn't talk about what it takes to create that output. And it may be affected by differences in production, and it's not a measure of financial efficiency. And so while net income, however you measure it, as a whole farm or per cow or whatever you're going to do, or per bull sold, for example, it's not a good measure. Now, that isn't just what I say. The greatest ag economist of all time from Iowa State, Earl Hetty, said in 1952, net profit, net income can no longer be used as a gauge for whether resources are used efficiently. But I'm here to tell you, for the last 51 years, most folks in agriculture continue to use it. And that's not good feedback, and it's led to some problems. So, what about return on assets? It is a measure of efficiency because it has that denominator. It's net income divided by the value of what it took to create that net income. So it's got that output-input relationship you need, and as I said, it is a measure of managerial efficiency. So, you hear lots about the return on assets for a large company is 10% or 12% or 6%. And what you don't hear a lot about is what that return on assets is for your operation or my operation, because it's not been an easy measure to have. The next thing I'm going to talk about is that profit is determined by a set of relationships. And for a lot of the last probably 15 years, I've worked in the what's called IRM, Integrated Resource Management, with not only our state in South Dakota, but also at the national level. And lots of those efforts over the last 15 years have been focused on cutting costs. And the department head of the fellow that I work for, an Angus Breeder named Dr. Don Boggs, and Dr. Boggs was a leader in this, in trying to get this type of discussion into the cattle industry. And yet, at the couple cow-calf conferences down in Darrell's country, Dr. Boggs made some statements about cutting costs and other things. He included everything up here. But what made it back home to South Dakota was that Dr. Boggs said that cattlemen should cut costs. And that hit the newspaper, and there was some editorial written, and he was actually criticized heavily for saying that, because people interpreted his efforts to help them drive down their cow costs as driving down their standard of living. And I've said ever since I wrote back to some of those folks that Dr. Boggs' effort wasn't to reduce their standard of living. His efforts is to improve their standard of living, but maybe drive the cow's standard of living down a notch. There are cows in the Dakotas that I think live better than some of the folks that are running them. You're going to see some wonderful country, and if you want to know how much I love this country, my kids have never been to Disney World, but we went from the door of North Dakota for our family vacation this year. So I love North Dakota. I hope you get out there, because it's absolutely beautiful. So, you can have a lot of different, you can throw those things around, and I'm going to do that for you here next, and you can have very profitable operations with a lot of mixtures. And I went to the database that I've created, and I'll talk to you about it in detail in a second. And those are three of the four measurements up there. Gross income per cow, $425, and for, I'll tell you what, it's not going to be that this year, but for a lot of years in our lives, it's been lucky to be that. If you look at it on a per cow basis. Total expenses per cow in the Dakotas is easily $1 a day, $400 a year. Assets invested on a cost basis of $2,300. You can't buy a ranch for that today, I know, but most of you didn't buy your ranches in today's market. So that's a pretty accurate figure. And so you come up with a return on assets of 2%. So Dr. Boggs and Dr. Strobing and other leaders of the industry said, well, you can improve that by driving down costs. So what if you do drive down costs? And in the folks that I work with in South Dakota, we have multiple people who have cow costs at $250 per cow per year. Now that's tough to do, but that's absolute fact. Well, if you have cow costs that low, you can have investment very low and gross income even lower, and you can have a 10% return on assets. In fact, we have folks in South Dakota who have over a 30% return on assets in their business, in a cow-calf business. But not everybody can do that, can you? You get into the business at a different time. You don't get into it when things were really cheap, like in 1986, for example. And you've got a higher level of investment than that, or you have higher expenses than that. Can you be profitable in this business? Well, sure you can. If you have a higher level of investment, as many people do, you can make money, but you have to adjust things. It actually puts more pressure on cost because you've got to drive those down. You've got to drive income up, but you can still have a 10% return on assets. And lots of seed stock producers would be in this type of a situation. Now, you don't sell calves, but you sell bulls, but you have to be in this business, invest more in it. And that's challenging for you, I'm sure. But you can have a profitable business, and what you know right away is that you need higher gross income, don't you? But to make this little scenario work, you also have to control costs, just like Dr. Barson said. Well, what if you have really high annual costs? And there are people who do. There are people in our data in South Dakota with over $600 per cow annual costs. And that's tough. That's a lot of money. But can they make some money in this business? I'm going to get this figured out about 20 minutes from now. Sure they can. If you have low investment and exceptionally good marketing skills, and there are lots of cattle in the zoo, you can have 10% return on assets. So, what I think I'd like to leave you with, just because you came into the business at a different time and have a different level of investment, doesn't mean you can't make money in this business. Just because you might have high annual costs doesn't mean that you can't make money in this business. You just have to adjust the other side of that equation to do it. And I'm here to tell you that is very achievable for all cattlemen. 10% double-digit return on assets should be a goal for every one of you. And you should have a record-keeping system, an accounting system, a business structure that allows you to do that, but I'm not going to go there today. Here's a little bit of our research results directed at identifying the factors affecting the profitability of the cow-calf enterprise. I know that's not all of your enterprise because you've got cow-calf and then you guys and gals take it a step forward and background those young animals and sell them as seed stock. But if you did an enterprise analysis, you're still cow-calf producers and that segment of your business still needs to be profitable. So, not to tell you a little bit about it, it's field data. I'm not a bench scientist, and Ron and Daryl know that, but I do like to get out in the field. And so, lots of this data was collected at kitchen tables and in county buildings in the basements of South Dakota. We have a very good extension building, so we're in this, in our county, we were at the bottom, we were at the basement of the county building, which was a WPA project. It was a little rough, but you can collect data anywhere, and we do. So it's field data, it's voluntary participation, and we follow what's called SPA, Standardized Performance Analysis Guidelines. And And we had about 239 people in our original data set. We kind of called that down to that we had 148 branches that had really good information. We had balance sheets and income statements and depreciation schedules and all of their production data. And so that's the size of the data set. We analyzed it. I know I had to relearn a lot of statistics to get this project done, and I won't bore you with that. But I want to tell you that we did take a little bit different approach. Jim Collins in his books, which is more recent than this data, but he's a Stanford business professor, and they do what's called frontier analysis. They go out and he studies businesses that are actually very, very rare, like 3% of the businesses that produce a certain type of product. Well, we didn't have a large enough data set, so we studied the top 16% and the bottom 16%. That's the breaks we took. He would study the top 3 or 4%. And then we had a big group in the middle. But we tried to emulate that with what's called frontier analysis. And we collected all the data and took the means and the standard deviations and all that stuff, and we used some regression techniques to study profitability. And I want to do one reality check with you first. On average, the return on assets for businesses in America is 10%. So that's every factory that you either drove by or flew over to get up here. Their average return on assets is 10%. In fact, most businesses, if it's not 20% or higher, they're not very interested in being in that business. Now, the bad news is that for the cow-calf industry, that by my figures and Jim McGrath, and I'm sure Darrell would agree, that's probably 2 to 3%. And that's not a competitive business. And if you want to really get to the roots of rural migration, out-migration of great states like North Dakota and South Dakota and Iowa, for example, even Darrell, this, in my opinion, is the driver, is that we're uncompetitive in our business. So one more. I know that now you're saying, well, you know, we might not make a lot of money, but we have a good time doing it and we live in pretty country. Well, you do. And I hope you do, or you wouldn't be doing it all these years. But a wise man that Darrell quoted said, there's no profit without pleasure, but there's no pleasure without profit. In a competitive, capitalistic economy, you don't have a choice to stay at a 2 or 3% return on assets and watch your kids leave home or leave the community and wonder why. If we want to be competitive, we want to stabilize this industry, we need to be profitable. And not profitable just in gross income or net income, because we'll get that this year. We have to be the next year. We have to be profitable in terms of our efficient use of resources. So, not to bore you with too much data, but a couple things. Here's the high profit group, the median profit group, and the low profit group. If figures up there are different color, they're statistically different from each other within a line. So, high profit producers, did they have the biggest calves? No, they didn't. They had average calves. But they didn't have smaller calves. And I think one of the things I'm most concerned about is in the magazine management that I see a little too much of, maybe, is this talk about, well, you know, we don't need these big calves. That means we're spending too much money. High profit people that had at least average calves. And really, 455 pounds per cow exposed, that's a mean weight over 500 pounds. That's pretty good. This is just folks walking in the door. Those are really good calves. Gross income per cow, what that tells you is that these folks marketed their cattle better than their contemporaries. They went to the marketplace, all of them the same marketplace, and we do have in this country, down through Nebraska, some of the finest feeder cattle markets, if not the finest feeder cattle markets in the world. But even within that great market, these people did a better job. Expenses per cow, $270 versus $386 versus $637. Which group has the lowest exposure to risk? Certainly this group does. They've driven expenses out of their business, and that's an incredible feat to produce the same pound of calf. Investment per cow, or net income per cow, $255 per cow. I'm going to talk about that and how powerful that is, versus 36, and these folks were losing $250 per cow per year. Investment per cow, only $1,400, and no, they didn't buy the ranches in 1902 during the Homestead Act. I won't get into all of it, but that's not why that's low. That's low because they made really good decisions about how they invested their money. Because they all participated in the same marketplace, the same playing field. The one that I want you to go home with, if you can leave, you know, if you go home and leave this great state with one thing from me, is that there's tremendous potential in this business. These folks made 18.2% return on assets on a cost basis. These folks made that three, just like we talked about, and these folks lost the whole place in 6 years. They didn't make it to today. They're out of business, unless they made dramatic changes. 18.2% return on assets in the late 1990s, that mid-1990s through late 1990s. That's an incredibly profitable business by any measure. So you can make money any way you want. I mean, you can balance those things. You can be high investment. I know that. But in this case, our high profit folks were on a unit basis. They had low investment. So low investment per cow, low investment per hundredweight weight calf. They had low annual costs. They had average production. But they had high levels of reproduction. Pregnancy percent was important, very important. And they had excellent marketing. Now, one guy looked at that and said, well, duh, you know, anybody can make money if they do those things well. Well, duh, it was so easy. Why only 16% of the people can do it? It's not easy. It's extremely difficult because of BSE, because of a dairy buyout in 1986, right? And it's a tough business. But these folks were able to ride their way through that and do a good job. How many cows? That's the big question, especially in this country. How many cows does it take? How many cows does it take for you to have, make a living in the cattle business? And in the magazine management type stuff, you'll hear 1,000 cows, or 1,000 cows per family, or 500, or 1,500, or the Deseret ranches do this, or do that, or whatever. Well, it all depends. The net income in the high profit group can pay off all debt in 10 years if you amortize it, provide $35,000 worth of family living, and they know that in other parts of the country that's not enough to make a living, but in the Dakotas that's an average family living, with 200 cows. Just take $250 per cow times 200, that was their net income per cow, times 200, that's 40, Kristen, that 45 or whatever, $1,000, take away that debt service, that's $35,000. That's not a big operation, is it? That's an incredibly profitable operation. So what about that medium-sized group? Just do the math real quick with me. If you have $36 in net income, how many cows is it going to take to generate $35,000 worth of net income? It's 972 cows, and you won't pay off a dollar of debt. The choice really, there is no choice to stay at that where 68% of these folks were. There's no choice. You can't do this. If this is the scenario someone's in, off-farm income is demanded because it's non-competitive. And who can get that big? What, are we all just going to eat each other and say, you know, big game survivor in the cattle business? Is that the way we're going to do this? We really need to be focusing in on what these people do well so we continue to have neighbors and rural communities and fire departments, etc., don't we? Or are we just going to eat each other up and sell? You know, there's only, you know, I had a neighbor in our county who only wanted to own all the land next to him. Anybody got to him? Was he in your community too? That's a picture of a little Missouri, and I hope you get blessed to see that. It's a beautiful country. But remember, in the face of the very same problems, the very same tough environments, and this can be a tough environment up here, markets and policies, some cattlemen are able to make an incredible amount of money. There's really, you know, that's good news, and it's a fairly large number of them. I'll just go over this pretty quickly for what the importance of using the correct denominator. And I've been doing this talk for several years now, and then I read a book that talked about this very same thing. One of the key things that great businesses do is use the correct denominator. Well, we have a choice. We can go per cow, and I still think Petrosis is great. I give a talk to Free Sweet Cow Symposium, and I still have cows, and so the talk I'm supposed to give is the best decisions I've made and the worst decisions I've made in cattle business. Well, I grew up on a family ranch that had a different colored face of cattle than yours, and I bought lots of Angus bulls, but in terms of the worst decision I ever made, I was driving up here in Alaska, I've got to be honest with you, I didn't buy enough Angus bulls. You got to have, per cow is what we all talk about, is what I've been talking about today. It's really good in communication, that's why I use it. It's used in property valuation. If you're going to buy a 300 cow outfit in Western North Dakota, you'll talk about it on a per cow basis. It's a good measure for some things. Reproductive performance, especially calving distribution, death loss. But it's got some downsides, and there's no output. If you wean 600, if you have $400 cow expenses and you wean 600 pound calves, or you wean 400 pound calves, your cost, your break even is completely different. And we need to be thinking about it differently. Per cow is not a very good measurement. It meant stocking rate. And per cow what? Is it cow exposed? That's what it should be. For beginning your female, I mean, what number are you going to use? So as easy it is to talk about per cow, it's not a good measurement. How about per acre? That is lots of pros for that. It's the fundamental unit of all of our production, whether you're from Texas or North Dakota or South Carolina or Denmark, there's the hectare over there exposed. But it represents the largest investment that any of us have. It does show regional differences, expresses difference in management choices. You can, if you have a very intensive grazing system, you're going to be very different than this, than someone in an extensive system. But there's some big problems. Again, for what? Does that include the total beef enterprise with hay? Or is that hay separate? And you can get into lots and lots of discussions. And you're going to see large regional differences if you use per acre, and so that's difficult. And the other thing is it can lead to abuse of land because if it's per acre, well, if I just increase my stocking rate a little bit, I'll blend that out, and that'll be great. The one that I really like to use the most, and certainly the most sensitive, is per hundredweight weaned calf. It's an inclusive measure. It includes reproduction, growth, nutrition, herd health, the whole ball of wax. Is how cattle are marketed, not your cattle, but your customer's cattle. And it's an excellent tool for cost control. The bad thing about it is not how we're used to thinking. We're used to thinking about per cow. And it takes a leap to divide that, to get to that weaning weight and divide it on out. And other than that, there's really no downside. It is the measurement that's the most sensitive. So our analysis showed clearly that per hundredweight weaned calf was by far the most statistically sensitive measure of profitability, much more sensitive than the choices. I want to talk just a minute about input-output relationships, and I know that this is a tough one for people, but I think it's absolutely critical. This little S-shaped curve is called the production function. It's inputs across the bottom and outputs. And if you raise corn, you know this really well because you know what nitrogen fertilizer does and you know what that limit is. If your yield goal is 100 bushel corn, if you're from Iowa, it's 250 bushel corn, but you know how much nitrogen to apply and you apply just a little bit more in case it rains and you know that relationship. You know where that point of diminishing returns is. And so in business, The point between those two stars, those two inflection points, is called rational business behavior. And outside of that, they call it irrational behavior. They don't call it not wise or silly. They call it irrational. It's irrational to put on 400 pounds of N if your yield goal is 200 pounds of nitrogen. We all know that. Now, tell me what the production function is for your beef cattle operation in terms of nutrition, veterinary medicine, labor. There is, no disrespect, but I don't think there's anyone in this room, in this state, in this country, on the beef cattle side that can do this on their operations. And that's not good for us. My colleague, Dr. Dick Cruz, did some early and kind of classical work on body condition scoring. So I took Dr. Cruz's work on body condition scoring. So that's kind of an information technology. It's a great monitoring tool. And I built a production function. And his data just fits perfectly. Body condition score cows, six cows had a 98% chance of being rebred in 60 days. Body condition score 7 cows had a 98% chance of getting rebred. There was no advantage to keep your cows fatter. Body condition score 5 had a 96%. You dropped one condition score down to 4 and you dropped it all the way down to 93%. I mean, it just fits really well. So, based on this data, that's rational business behavior. To keep your cows in a body condition score 5 or 6. So that's what you guys have been saying forever. But it's just a different way of looking at it. The kicker is that I want everyone to go home with, especially in states with cyclical droughts like this one does, or our state does, is that it's probably irrational to take the gamble to let your cows get too thin. And on the flip side, there's no advantage to let them get too fat. I'm going to end up with what I think is the main driver in this whole thing, and that's investment. I think that as I've worked with people since I collected this data, collected a lot more, worked at a lot of the kitchen table, I think investment, and in fact overinvestment, is the big problem in this business. It's not the numerator that's the problem. It's not net income. It's this infrastructure, mostly of iron, and mostly of one certain color. That really is a huge problem in this business. Daryl, every time Daryl hears me, he gets up and says, "You're going to get fired." But I'm getting serious, and I won't go to the tractor side of it. I presented my data to the Secretary of Agriculture, Larry Gabriel, of South Dakota, Larry Gabriel, and Larry, a rancher from western South Dakota, and a great guy. And Larry looked at it and he said, and he didn't say much, and he thought for a while. He said, this is in April, or this is in early May. And he said, Barry, I just went home last weekend to the ranch and went to the neighbors, and we branded, and we all pulled in, and there were 26 pickups, and all of them had more than two doors, and they all pulled fifth wheel trailers, and they all had more than two horses, and they're just beautiful outfits. Most of them were aluminum, and they had one of those fold out, pull up, and fold out corral systems, and so cowboy ride out, and it's a big deal. They ride 25 or 6 cowboy ride out. And come back in, and they bought 100 pairs. Larry said, "That's the step I want you to take. I mean, you can look at data all you want, but do what Larry did. Take it home and think about overinvestment." Clearly, people ran cattle, other than on the gross blood reservation where I live. People ran cattle for other reasons than ownership. On the road, then you ran them for ownership. I got a lot of stories, but only two more. Take this home and think about. I don't know what part of that equation is the solution for you to make that double-digit return at this. My gut feeling is it's this one. So as you evaluate technology, and you evaluate And I know your places have to look showy and all those things, but be very careful about investment. In the drought of last year, the NRCS came into South Dakota and said, well, we'll build pipelines. And so we've got diggers and trenchers and pipeline, and we're running pipeline out there all across South Dakota. And all of a sudden, at the end of the year, after they spent everybody's cash reserves, they realized there wasn't any grass at the end of the pipeline. Be careful of overinvestment. Now, it can be pipelines, it can be fences, it can be anything, but it can be breeding stock, or you can overinvest. On the flip side, and I know this, because investments have a role of annual expenses. You can spend too little on investments. And if you want to, you know, mow hay with a, you know, an M and a couple of 9-foot bars, you can do that, but you're going to drive up other things. So I know there's a balance. I'm very well aware of that. But this one really is a problem for most people. So, believe it or not, that's not computer enhanced. There's great hope in this business. It's not only on the marketing side. You can drive costs out of your business and be very competitive. It's been a great privilege to be with you this morning, and I thank you very much.